Hello and welcome to From Fear to Fire, secrets to overcome fear, embrace your gifts, and achieve success. This is the place where real people share real challenges, where you can find a common bond and uncommon wisdom through their journeys to help you move from fear to fire. We'd love for you to subscribe, give us a great rating here, share it with your friends. We absolutely love that. As you know, I am Heather Hansen-O'Neill. I am your host, and we always have a quote of the day and an awesome guest for you. So let's start with that quote of the day. Learn from yesterday, live for today, and hope for tomorrow. The important thing is not to stop questioning. And that quote is by Albert Einstein. Today, we have a wonderful guest. Her name is Mary Abazia, and she is the Managing Director of Impact Planning Group, a strategic consulting company. She's co-author of The Accidental Marketer and a TEDx and keynote speaker. She's known for her ability to unlock organizations' superpowers and their unique point of value. She's originally from Northern California, where she started her career at Intel and later joined the Basies Group, forecasting new products and services. Over the past 20 years, she's taught marketing to executives at Columbia University and at California Institute of Technology. However, most of her time is spent helping organizations use the impact tools to quickly align and create their strategies. Clients include companies such as GE, Pfizer, UTC, and Marriott. A warm welcome for Mary. How are you doing today, Mary?
I'm good. Thank you, Heather. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm so excited. Listeners, I know Mary. She's amazing. She's just a wealth of information, great energy. You're going to love her. And so this is why I feel completely confident diving into probably one of the harder questions. So Mary, what was your biggest fear and how did you turn it into a fire?
Well, I love the question. I love the fact that that is your theme too, because it really gets people thinking. It got me thinking when you asked me to join you. I think my biggest fear was when I was trying to decide if I wanted to move from California to Connecticut, and it came with kind of an interesting way of getting there. I met a professor from Columbia University on an airplane when I was traveling for business back and forth from California to New York. And he tried to convince me that I should sell my house and leave my family in California and move to a place I didn't know anyone here. And, you know, for a job I didn't really know anything about. I was going to teach, I teach at Columbia University, their executive program. And he also had a company which was helping clients. So it was a big different thing. And it took me about 5 months of a lot of soul searching and talking to my dad and saying, are you okay if I leave you with my friends? So I think that was my biggest jump. And there was definitely a lot of fear. And I hadn't thought of it at the time as fire. But looking back on it, it really did look like I was jumping into a good fire.
That's awesome. And you know, what's interesting about it is that, you know, fear can immobilize us and can keep us stuck, but it also gives us sometimes the space to do what you did, which was think through, is this going to make sense? Let me do a little research. Let me ask some other people. Let me figure out, is this the best choice? So sometimes, you know, fear isn't always the worst thing out there. It can guide us and help us. So that's great that you did that. So now, do you use that same thing often? I mean, how do you address your fears in general? Is that what you typically do, or do you have other recommendations?
Yeah, I like your quote too. Your Albert Einstein quote about never stop asking questions, because I think that is one of the biggest lessons that I learned was to use a way to analyze it. I'm a nerd anyway, you know, working at Intel. And so I always have to bring some kind of an analysis into the way I think, because I get so emotional that I get mixed up. So putting things on paper for me seems to help a lot. And so I wrote down my ideal world, and that included both, you know, a lot of things about my job. You know, I wanted to work with smart people and continue to be challenged by learning about marketing and you know, how companies do different things. But I also put on that list things that were, you know, personal, that I wanted to live in an environment that I loved, I felt safe in, and that I would feel like I wanted to explore. So I listed the things that I really wanted. And then I took this opportunity that I had here in Connecticut, and I rated it on a 10-point scale to see how well it fit with what I wanted. But I also rated where I was already. You know, I loved the job I had at Basies. It was very interesting forecasting. And then I had a couple other jobs that were possible in San Francisco. So, you know, so it was good to put all those on paper. And then as I scored all of them, I was able to not only see that Connecticut won, you know, with my bottom line score, but also where there were areas that I just really had questions, and I was still uncertain. And so through those 5 months, ironically, I had to come back to Connecticut from California a couple of times, and I knew at least what to ask more of this professor, Bill Brandt, but also to ask real estate agents and things like that. So it helped me figure out where my fear really did lie and how I needed to figure that out before I made my final decision.
You know, so. I absolutely adore this. And here's why. It's not the way my brain works. You know, and that's one of the reasons that I love doing a show like this one, is that I have the great opportunity and pleasure to meet people who have skill sets that are different from mine, have ways of thinking, perspectives that are different from mine, and that I can learn from. I will be using this as a great strategy moving forward, because if it doesn't come naturally to you, it's an excellent tool to add on. You know, for you, it's the way that You're not a nerd, by the way. However, you're a self-proclaimed nerd. That's the way that your brain works, but mine doesn't. And so this is an excellent tool for both of us, for how it comes naturally to you. But for me, to be able to see things that perhaps I wouldn't have thought of and ask questions that I wouldn't have otherwise. So I absolutely love that. And the thing that I have done that you suggest is write things down. When it comes to, you know, taking a look at my listeners know that I'm a big fan of, you know, looking at your goals, what you want to accomplish, write it down, make it into a visual so that you can take the right actions. But this is fantastic. So now your company, Impact Planning Group, do your clients encounter these types of fears, and do you use this to help them? How does that work?
Yeah, I didn't know at the time. In fact, it was funny when I really thought about what my fear to fire was, and then I looked at what I do with my company. It's been 20 years now since I made that big decision. Yeah. And working with clients, the set of tools that we use include something called the criteria of attractiveness. And that was invented actually 40 years ago by these professors from Columbia. So when I started using their tools and working with them, it was just natural because it, you know, I liked thinking that way. And then they had a tool that actually did that. So when we work with clients, one of the things that we do is have them go through and create a criteria of attractiveness, which is, what is it that you want? Let's say they're launching a new product or a new service. What is it that's important in a marketplace that you're trying to launch into? And, you know, you may have a lot of opportunities with different geographies or different types of customers, but when you list those and then score them, you're able to see, you know, where you're strong or weak. And it's interesting at an individual level, but it becomes chaotic and like the coolest thing when you watch a group of people try to do it together.
Because
everyone has their own opinions. If you have somebody from finance, somebody from legal, you have a salesperson in there, you have, you know, if you're doing medical stuff, you have somebody that has a, you know, the medical perspective. And you put all of them in a room and say, okay, we're trying to do this with our company. You know, we're trying to figure out if we should, you know, provide generics to the market, or we should open a new part of our business. Whatever those big decisions are, to get them in a room, they can usually come up with a pretty good list. what they want, but then we ask them to weight it. And that's where the fun begins, because everyone has a different opinion. And then they try to somehow weasel out of it and just say, well, let's just use like 20% for everything. And it's like, you can't do that. There has to be some, you know, heavier weights and lighter weights. And so once they agree on those, I mean, they're already making those decisions on a daily basis in their brain. But to get each other to talk about it and then to see what each other's thinking is really valuable for organizations. And then you have the part where you have to score your different opportunities. But they come out of there and, you know, they finally, after it's really hard if they want to really do it right. But when they walk out of there, they can see what each other was thinking and they align around it and come up with a good decision collectively. And then they can use that moving forward with other decisions. So it's amazing how powerful something like that can be.
Oh, I can only imagine. I mean, I think that that's the key right there, is to be able to have them communicating and understand where the other team is coming from, where the other person is coming from, because that communication will help them to be able to work together in every capacity better. And I love the criteria of attractiveness. That's fantastic. That phrase is awesome. And I've come to learn, I know I said in the beginning that this way of thinking doesn't come naturally to me, but that's why I've come to really appreciate processes, frameworks, and systems that can guide me. So some people are more naturally drawn to it, but it's especially important for people who, you know, think a little bit differently, a little bit, you know, creative, whatever, and for them to have those tools so that you're following the same system, so that you're on the same page, so that you can be more effective and you can know, right? That's the key. You have to know if you're being effective or not. And I think something like this can be really helpful, can it?
Well, I like what you're saying too, because you're right. It is a way to measure what you believe. And then, you know, smart groups or smart people that then go back and check it to see, was our assumptions correct? You know, we made a decision a year ago or 6 months ago, and how are we doing on that? So to have a, you know, not only to use a tool to make decisions like that, but to have the discipline to continue to check back and say, is this criteria, is this yardstick the right one for us for making even future decisions, whether we're investing in R&D, which is always, there's always fear around any of these big decisions. You know, are we investing in R&D in the right places? Are we hiring the right types of salespeople? And you can, I guess the official word for it is calibrate. You can calibrate your criteria of attractiveness so that, and things change. Like my list of what I wanted 20 years ago, fortunately, has changed. So right. If I was to make big decisions again, which seems like I'm doing them often, that changes, as well as companies. As they change, they need to check back on their list and update it. And if they get new leaders, you know, if you get a new CEO or a new boss, you probably do need to check back in. But what a great exercise to do with your group to see, you know, are we thinking about that nirvana or the ideal in the same way, or where do we have missteps? So.
And you know, you can use this same thing that you use with large companies on an individual basis. And the key right there that you're bringing out for us is to be able to go back and look at, okay, are these actions that I've taken, and we're at the time of the year now where I'm so goal focused for next year, but this is great. And I'm going to be able to take what you're sharing with us and help people to understand that when you're doing your individual goals, to figure out how you want to measure them. How am I going to know if I'm successful? And then to go back periodically and check and make sure that you're aligned, that you're taking the right actions. Because we can get, whether it's a small group or whether it's a large company, we can get sidetracked by those fires. Now, I'm using fire not in the traditional positive sense that I usually like to, but when people come to us and they say, oh, we've got to do this, or I've got this idea to do this, and this is a priority item, so you've got to do this, and then you've been drawn away from where you know you need to go, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I have to tell you, I I've grown to even appreciate it more recently. My son is looking at going to colleges, and you know, I, just like any good 16-year-old, he's like, "Mom, you are nuts. I'm not going to do this." but we're on, I think, our sixth college now, and as we went to each one, you know, he would say, "Oh, I like that one because I think they have, you know, good food, or they're next to a city, or the program seems to be in line with what I wanted." And there was this always, we put an X factor in. We didn't know what the words were for it. He just said, this place feels really good, or this place feels really bad. And so I've really started to understand what he's looking for, which is magic to try to get a 16-year-old boy to explain anything to you, right? Let alone what he wants to do with his life. And I don't, you know, we've agreed not to do weights on things, but we have a sense of it. And now when we go to colleges, he's like, okay, and he'll give me this score from, and it's, you know, it's 1 to 10, 10 is best. And I'm starting to see patterns of what he's starting to like. So when he meets with his college counselors, that hopefully he'll at least be able to articulate to them some of the things he's really looking for as well in his college. But you can use it with buying a new house, buying a car, finding a new spouse. I mean, really, the uses are endless when you really start to do
that. I imagine. And I got to tell you that that counselor of his is going to be blown away, because I guarantee you there are not a lot of 16-year-olds coming in to have that conversation with measuring tools. It's fantastic. So, Mary, how do you stay objective when you're measuring the different options?
Yeah, I think that's the right question. If you're doing it by yourself, I'm really lucky. I have a couple of sisters that I just adore, and I shared my list with them, and then, you know, being good sisters, they, you know, call me out on things that they thought I wasn't being honest about.
That's so fantastic.
So if you have a confidant, you know, if you have some really good friends or sisters that that can, if it's a personal goal, you know, if you have a husband, it's probably good to check in with your husband or wife, or, you know, spouse or significant other one, if they're going to be part of those decisions too.
Right.
So that's a really good way to be objective, is to make sure that whoever's affected by your decisions, you know, can see your list of what you're thinking up front. And then if they're part of, you know, scoring stuff, or if they're part of those decisions, when you come to companies, there's this reality of, you may, you know, have the most incredible product, and you think you're going to, you know, light the world on fire. But there's these things called customers that probably don't think the same. Either there's something out there already, or it's not as cool as they think you think it is. So I think that when you get to companies, you have to involve the customer's voice in that as well. You know, is there a need? Is this satisfying a unique need that no one else has? Or, you know, does it in a way that is relevant for them? So you have to put some customer pieces in and check in with them too. So it is a version, when you use it in the corporate world or in an organization, that you need to do that additional check in. Does that make sense, or is that
makes no? It makes so much sense, and I'm gonna say, I'm gonna call out to my entrepreneurs out there who sometimes are just so excited about this new product or service that they throw it out there with their terminology, with their idea of why it's cool, without asking potential clients what they think is most important, and they're losing out on an opportunity to really succeed if they could use the language and create a better version of this product or service that takes into account the real needs of the end user. It takes it to a whole other level. And the same thing as you go up and you're working with larger and larger companies, they tend to do it more. But to keep refocusing back on that client, the end user, is so important.
And it's easy to get lost, especially as an entrepreneur. You've got so many things going on in your life. You're trying to, you know, make sure your finances are in order. You're trying to make sure you, if it's products, getting products out the door. And when we do circle backs with clients, it's usually that they lost sight of what the customer really wanted. They got so tangled up in themselves and maybe just a portion of what they wanted, not the bigger picture. So doing a check-in on that is really good.
That's awesome. And are there any other uses for this tool that you would suggest for people?
Yeah, as I mentioned, we my poor husband, we used it to buy our house, buy a car. If you're looking for a job, I think this is another one that I really like.
That's a good one.
Yeah, if you're trying to make a decision on, different, even if it's between different companies, or it's some people that I've worked with are thinking about going back to school. So what is the drawbacks and the opportunities to getting an MBA versus just moving on to the next job? And so we use that framework for them to think through what they might want to consider doing next. So I think that, definitely when you're looking for a job, or if you are looking to hire people, conversely, that's a, if you're trying to think about an advertising agency you're hiring or a new employee, you kind of flip it around and say, what's the ideal employee look like? And then as I meet these different candidates, how are they scoring on my list of criteria? Or as a committee, if you're a committee, how are they fitting into our committee's list?
So. Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And I know that you do go, I loved your book, The Accidental Marketer. And for me, I'm going to share with you listeners out there that I love the fact that Mary and her co-author had added together stories, strategies, and visuals. I mean, for me, I absolutely love that. But I want you, in your words, Mary, to share how you have incorporated some of what we've been talking about into The Accidental Marketer.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for saying that. The Accidental Marketer came about really because it was in our heads, and it's how we work with companies. We work with groups all the time, even, small groups. It's our secret sauce. It's our approach that we take, and we call it outside in. And most of the people that we end up working with aren't the ones that are really good at marketing, but the ones that are really great at doing other things. They have, a passion or a skill that they're, an attorney, or they have a business that they're working on. They're artists or they're scientists. And so they have another skill set, and then they find out that they have to become marketers. And there is not a lot of resource out there for them to find out how to do marketing, especially if they've been trained in a very different way. So we made that very practical. Mm-hmm. And, the 10 chapters are exactly the 10 steps that we would take anyone through, starting with thinking about what's going on in the market, what's going on with your customers, and what's going on with your competition, then thinking about what are my opportunities. That's where that criteria of attractiveness, it has a whole chapter for itself to say, what am I deciding that I'm going to do? And then what am I going to do afterwards? How am I going to price, and how am I going to communicate to people? So it really, it was fun to write it because it reflects everything that we do when we're working with real people. And Wiley was nice enough to say, they said, you have a book in your head, we just need to get it on paper. So
yeah, that's awesome. So, I love it. So we're going to give you the opportunity. Actually, why don't we do it right now? Let's give you the opportunity to share with people how they can find that, and maybe your website, or how you want them to communicate with you. Can you share that now?
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. Yes. So we made it easy. Theaccidentalmarketer.com. So you just type that into your browser and it'll pop up. And we have a website that has all kinds of podcasts and blog posts. It's a great resource. If you like this kind of stuff, it's all there. You can also buy the book on Amazon, The Accidental Marketer. And then if you ever want to send me questions or anything, you can just email me. It's M for Mary, and then my last name is Abazia, like the band ABBA, ABBAZIA, at impactplan.com. impactplan.com, my company, impactplan.com.
And you know what? We'll add those links for anyone who's furiously scribbling right now or driving. We'll add those links to the show note for everyone to be able to make it nice and easy just to click and go find you. Okay, so I have another question for you. As a fellow TEDx speaker, I'm throwing this one off the cuff to you, but was there any fear wrapped around that?
You're really good at this stuff. Yes, there was. But it was interesting. I didn't know when we first got accepted to be, a TEDx speaker last year, I was really excited. There really wasn't as much fear then. But then it was like, ooh, I really have to do this. And the more that I read, the more that I was fearful.
Sometimes realized, too much information, right?
Exactly. It was like, okay, I speak all the time. I love speaking. But it was such a different format, and it was a demand. You have to figure out how in 18 minutes, the format that we use, how to really get your point across and make sure that people understand it and have something really helpful for them to use in some way. So I was lucky. I had some really wonderful coaches that guided me to make sure. And then no matter what, when you walk on stage, I felt like, okay, I was ready. I practiced with Sandra and everyone else we have a pro speaker group that was very kind to help me. But when you stand on that stage, your stomach is in your throat. My stomach is in my throat. I don't know about yours, but and the fear was there. And it was, I think all of a sudden I was like, wow, this is really it. This is fun. And I think even during that, when I was recording, I was like, I really am so excited that I finally got to the top of the mountain in this case. But you're right. It was a lot of different fears along the way. So
yeah, it is. It was, we both love to speak, but something about a TEDx, it's like there's a whole other level of fear attached to it, but so much fun as well. And you did a great job on it. So you were able to overcome that fear and nobody knew it was ever even there. So I know, I can't believe it. It just flies by. When you do a 30-minute show, it just absolutely flies by. So we're at the end of our show. Do you have any final words of wisdom for our listeners today?
Oh, wow. Yes, I do think that that when you think about fear, it's going to come in all different shapes and sizes. And the faster you can write down, first the fire. I think that for me, it's making sure that writing down what is it that you really want to have. What is the ideal? What's your nirvana in whatever situation you're in? I think if you start outside in or backwards and say, what's my fire first? And then identify, measure it. If you want to use that type of an approach, you can measure then what parts of that fire you're most afraid of. So it breaks it down and makes it more manageable, I believe. So
I think that's great, because sometimes fear can be just so overwhelming, and anything that you can do to make it more manageable, to be able to help people go through it. And that's an excellent tool for that. And you've given us a bunch of them today, Mary. So a huge thank you today for these ideas and these concepts and your time and energy. I so appreciate you. Thank you.
Oh, Heather, thank you so much. What a pleasure.
This has been fun. And everybody else, we'll see you next time. Have a good one and enjoy. Bye.